Hey, Lily, I'm curious about how you've been using AI at your day job. In my conversations with product people lately, I've gotten a few great use cases, but loads more cautionary tales.
Ooh, interesting. How are your connections using it?
Well, let's see. One CPO had it write user stories for an epic, and it did a really great job. But this was a waterfall use case. They were implementing a publicly documented API, so there weren't that many unknowns in this one, and while the stories needed to be tweaked, it saved a load of time. But when people tell me about the bad use cases, they tend to show up when there's lots of unknowns or when there's unique circumstances in the company or when the PM doesn't even bother to read the output and just passes it along to the team.
Okay, yeah, that might be more the fault of having a faulty product manager than the actual tool itself being a problem. And we definitely tend to use it to write first versions of things like job descriptions or user stories again as well. And also getting inspiration on a piece of work. So, for example, we are doing some financial modeling at the moment. And I asked ChatGPT how I could do it and what I should include. And that was actually really helpful.
Well, that leads in really nicely to our guest today. And she's here to talk to us about how she and her team use AI in their daily processes, building an AI-enabled service for product people.
Yes, Jana Willander, the CEO at Craftful, is here to talk about all that, what she looks for in hiring product people in this space, and whether AI is going to replace product managers.
There's some good news there, though we'll see how long podcast hosts actually have.
On with the chat.
The Product Experience is brought to you by Mind the Product. Every week on the podcast, we talk to the best product people from around the globe.
Visit mindtheproduct.com to catch up on past episodes and discover loads of free resources to help you with your product practice. You can also find more information about Mind the Product's conferences and their great training opportunities happening around the world and online.
Create a free account on the website for a fully personalized experience and to get access to the full library of awesome content and the weekly curated newsletter. Mind the Product also offers free Product Tank meetups in more than 200 cities. There's probably one near you.
Hi, Jana. Welcome to the Product Experience podcast. It's great to be talking to you today.
So glad to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
So before we get stuck into our topic, it would be fab if you could give our listeners a quick intro into who you are and what you have been doing in product, but also what you do today, which is beyond the scope of product, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a CEO and founder of Craftful, which is a co-pilot for product teams to help them build better products by listening to millions of users and minutes. Before Craftful, I was product lead at various tech companies, everything from PM number two at a fast-growing unicorn to head of product at the company responsible for products that served millions of users. So really done a kind of a big spectrum of different types of product work.
So we're not talking about being a CEO today. We are talking about how product people can use AI in their day-to-day lives to, I guess, make their jobs easier and to work more effectively, faster, and take advantage of this new technology that is bubbling up all around us in lots of different ways. But let's start with kind of what's going on with large language models and kind of generative AI at the moment. How much knowledge do you think, technical knowledge, do you think product managers need to have in this space to be able to really understand the capabilities there?
I think it really depends on what you're working on when you're touching large language models. So if you're going to be a PM working on foundational models at, you know, like OpenAI or Google or any one of the companies building foundational models, which isn't a whole lot of those opportunities around, then you really need to have in-depth understanding of machine learning and be able to come up with, you know, how your team should go about to build a better model, which is really, really technical understanding of these types of models. If you're building an AI solution on top of the foundational model, which is what most folks working in this space are doing, you need to be able to understand how foundational models work and how they evolve. But you don't need to be able to kind of conceptualize how you would build a better one. And I should maybe to give a little bit more concrete examples on that. You need to be able to understand how the model works to be able to come up with that architecture and prompts that you would use to create your product. And then you need to understand how the model evolves to strategically decide how you're investing your time. So, for example, if you come across an edge case that the model doesn't address well today, you need to figure out kind of, do I need to adjust my prompting or my architecture, or do I need to fine-tune the model, or do I need to use another foundational model, or should I just wait until the foundational model I'm using is going to get better? And if so, maybe I need to just change the user experience around how I use the model in the meantime, right? So there's a few kind of different things that you may want to consider. And if you don't know how it evolves or anticipate how the model is going to evolve, then you may end up building something that will take much longer to build and may be too late because the model has changed in the meantime and you really mm-hmm. didn't need to build it.
That is the most depressing answer I've ever heard. Not because of what you were saying. I think it was a brilliant answer. But it sounds exactly like every other legacy tech decision that I've dealt with in the last 20 years.
You're like, so many things have changed, but this hasn't.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go slightly past. I'm curious. The answer you gave, though, is that specific to people working on things that are using generative AI or people using generative AI as a superpower for what they're doing? So as in...
That's a great clarification. Yeah, this is most definitely for people building with large language models and generative AI, which is sort of the space I am in. But if you're looking at using generative AI tools, then of course it's a very different equation. I would say that you similarly need to appreciate the evolution quite a bit because the space is moving so quickly that if you try out a tool today and you assume that, okay, I could not use it to solve this pain point, mm-hmm. the wrong conclusion would be that large language models aren't good at that. The right conclusion is this tool isn't good at solving this solution today. And tomorrow, even this cool tool may be able to do it, but also just like there's so many other solutions out there and it's moving so incredibly quickly that I think that just that's probably what I would kind of take away, the kind of understanding that you need to have if you're using these tools.
And how big is the learning curve, do you think? So, for example, when you're hiring, do you hire people only with previous AI, LLM experience, or are you hiring for talent and saying, this is something I can teach, I can get people up to speed on?
Yeah, I'm the latter. I'm hiring for folks who can learn really quickly and are very, very flexible. And you can see that they have their kind of growth mindset is the kind of the piece that I'm looking for.
And are you finding, I don't know if you're hiring at the moment or kind of how recently you've been hiring, but are you finding that there are people out there who do come with experience, whether it's experience that they've kind of gained from playing around with stuff or doing research that, you know, in their own time, or whether it's from like work that they've been doing? Is there a pool of product managers out there that have a lot more knowledge with this technology than others?
Yeah, there's definitely, and I would say, you know, we're a very, very small team. So we have been actively hiring. We have hired quite a lot of folks recently. The most recent hire starts on Monday. But I would say that when we are hiring, we're really hiring for people that have played around with the technology. You know, we fall in that second bucket where, you know, we're building on top of foundational models. Everyone on our teams needs to be able to understand how foundational models work and evolve. They don't need to actually be able to build them. And so I'm looking for people who have ideally played around, right? Because now, you know, I started playing around with GPT technology in 2020. So you have been able to play around with it for a while. And so I'm looking for folks who ideally have, but also just looking to see, will they be able to? we don't have necessarily anyone who can build large language models on our team. And I would say that that may be in some sense a liability, right? If you're to have someone who with that expertise, if you're building a product on top of foundational models, because folks who have that expertise, and there's very few of them, are going to be want to build models and focus on fine tuning and do things that are pretty big investments, which could potentially distract you from the kind of the investments that you need to be doing in this really fast moving space and take you away from the work that actually is strategically important.
Yana, part of our job as podcast hosts is to ask the stupid question so that you can give us the smart answer. So I'm going to not be afraid. I'm just going to go ahead and ask the stupid question.
Do it.
So we've all worked with stakeholders who think they know exactly what is needed. They know what to build. They know what to do. And they all complain that the product team is just not fast enough, weird, or we don't do the right thing. So is AI going to replace product management in organizations like that, where they just say, write the stories, write the tickets, write the user acceptance criteria? Is there a danger that product management just disappears where the CEO believes they know better?
I'm gonna respond with this super corny thing, which is no, AI will not replace PMs. PMs using AI will replace PMs. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing, right? That AI is able to handle lots and lots of different tasks that then can free up product managers to be much more strategic in their work. And be able to make better decisions with all the data that AI makes accessible. That's for today. I think the really interesting question is what happens after, right? In the world with AGI and superintelligence, and in the place where AI can actually think and reason better than humans, what happens then, right? And I believe that humans will still want to build products for other humans, because creating things is what makes us human. Our drive to, create things, art, technology, is what distinguishes us from other species. And I think that's always going to be true. That's kind of why I'm so excited to be building for product builders, because I think we'll always figure out how to continue doing that and how to make sure that that's valuable in a world where AI can reason better than us.
So in a world where AI replaces product managers, it's probably also replacing everyone else around us as well.
I think that we product managers are actually product builders. We're in the category of product builders, and we will continue being product builders. We will be somehow in an AI-enabled way be building products. And, the good analogy in my mind is what happened with art after photography, right? Folks continued being a market for art. People continued making art. People continued buying art. And it's because there's something there we humans love to create. And when we create something for other humans, other humans see a value in that. That's kind of unique to that human creation. I think that's what, and I don't know exactly what that will look like, but we product managers in the category of product builders will continue having a role to play.
It will be like old school, use this product. It was created by coding manually by hand with no code solutions and no AI used.
It will be created by manually thinking.
Artisanal HTML.
Exactly. So you said something earlier about how PMs that use AI will replace PMs. How do you see PMs the PMs that are using AI, how do you see them using, or how do you think they will be using AI in their kind of daily jobs?
Yeah, so we use AI for products, and we obviously use our own AI, so Craftful AI. We use that for all of our user research and road mapping today. So all of our support chats and intercom and user calls sync directly to Craftful from Google Meet. And then we get lists of feature requests that come with links to direct mentions. We can ask follow-up questions and chat with that feedback. We're a B2B company, so we mostly rely on intercom and calls with users, but our B2C customers can do the same thing with App Store reviews and online reviews for like G2 data and that kind of stuff. From there, you can do kind of deeper research. So we have this survey tool where you can feed in all of the past feedback and have the survey automatically generate follow-up questions and format all of those questions with AI. So that what used to take hundreds of hours to kind of read through all of the feedback you already had and then try to figure out what are going to be my kind of follow-up questions takes a minute. And then we send out those surveys to users, and we also have them embedded on our website and continuously collect feedback that way. We then use it to generate user stories, which are also AI generated, and get synced automatically to Jira when there's a feature request that we actually want to act on. We have AI generated projects, which are sort of like the foundation of our roadmap.
One of the things I find quite interesting about all of this, but about what you were saying there was, you know, if we can use AI to kind of work faster, smarter, get it to do a lot of the insight analysis, like creating surveys so that we can understand our customers better, synthesizing all of that data, writing user stories, building roadmaps. And I can imagine that, like, I can really, you know, seeing what ChatGPT can do, like, I can imagine all of this kind of coming to fruition. But I feel like some of the creativity in the product role is in some of those things and is in our kind of consumption of that data and our own kind of internal synthesis of that, and then how we then create our stories and roadmaps and things. And I think there was a story, I can't remember who told me this, but around how they created these robots to help pick and pack in supermarkets. And actually, instead of it kind of helping the human, for like free up the human to do more interesting things, the human was kind of dumbed down to this, like, now pick up this thing, now pick up this thing, and like would only kind of feed it like one task at a time or something like that. And it's almost like hearing you talk about what AI can do for us is incredibly powerful, but it does make me feel like, well, hang on, where is that creativity going to come? Like, what does the product manager then get to do that is creative?
I think, you know, and maybe that's, there's lots of different ways in which that can happen. I can kind of talk about how we think about that in our product today. But I think as these tools evolve, that's going to be a big question around, are they built in a way to enable that creativity, or are they built in a way that just creates, you know, an interesting work for everyone? We really thought about deeply, how do we make sure that we surface everything that a user, a product manager needs to know so that they can be creative. So that when I come to Craftful, I get a list of, here's all the things that your users said, and they're prioritized by mentions, how frequently they were mentioned. So I don't have to go and read, but I could, right? Like, I can then click through and just read examples of where it came up and how that looked. Then it's up to me to decide which of these things are interesting, if any. And when I do that, I say, okay, now generate a user story about this one thing, or do not. Actually, do not generate user stories about any of these things. I want to create a project, a new project that's based off of my idea. And then I can go and see, is there some interesting feedback I've been getting about this? No, well, now let me then survey my users and try to find out what they would think about this idea. And then the way the survey mechanism works is I put in a new topic that's not based on anything that is in Craftful, that's based on my idea again, right? And it automatically generates a survey with questions that I have then as a foundation, and I can then tweak them and change them however I want. But it saves me time at every step, so that the steps where I would creatively come up with what's the best solution to user's problem, I have lots of time to do that. And I have lots of tools to use to try to figure out what exactly is going to be the right solution. Same thing with, you know, when I write a PRD I get an option to just generate it based on what I want it to be, not necessarily based on what's already in Craftful, right? So there's kind of figuring out that right balance between the user using the product and what data you're surfacing to the user. I think that that's where you hopefully get at that human creativity.
Yana, we've all seen, and certainly I've had the experience where playing around with an LLM and it starts making things up. And that may just be because of poor prompting or it was a more immature model at the time. So if you're asking it to project things based on previous responses, what's the data? Is this just an example of a lazy person using bad tools or somebody using tools poorly? How do you protect against that? You know, you may be smart enough to use the systems well, but how do you ensure that everyone else is using them well and not being led down the wrong path by a fanciful answer?
Yeah, so we've put together a lot of different machine learning tools in our analysis. So it isn't just relying on kind of feeding data into the model and then getting an output back. So there's multiple different steps, and as a result, it really is getting insights out of the data, grouping those insights. This is kind of just big buckets of how it works. Grouping those insights into categories and then matching it back to original mentions. And that matching back to original mentions helps make sure that there aren't hallucinations. But even if there were, we then show this to the human operator, to the user, so that they can see, okay, here's a category of feedback that came up, and here's how many times the model thinks that it came up. And then I can click through and read original mentions and see, is this doing what I thought it was going to do? Or maybe it's not. And then I give feedback on that. And we use that feedback to continuously improve the model to make sure that it works better and better for our users over time.
And I feel like one of the things that you've talked about a bit as well around like how product managers use these AI tools is the kind of the new skills and techniques that we need of analyzing these AI outputs and potentially prompt, like writing the right kinds of prompts and things like that. How do you see us like evolving these skills as product people? And is there anything else that we're going to need to learn?
I think that the need to learn how to prompt well is becoming smaller and smaller over time. When I started experimenting with these models in early 2020, the prompts had to be incredibly complicated to get something even remotely as helpful as the kind of things you can get by just like saying one word today to the model or a couple of words. What I think is going to happen is that it's going to be easier and easier over time to get good output out of these models. And so prompting isn't necessarily going to be, prompt engineering is not necessarily going to be a concept. And of course, you know, various tools, various kind of specialized tools that also help adjust the models to specific users also help with that, right? Because even if it is a little bit more complicated to prompt models today, when you use Craftful, you don't actually have to, right? It just generates a list of feature requests for you, and it generates a survey for you, and it generates a PRD for you, and it generates a user story and acceptance criteria and all that stuff. But I do think that the skill or even maybe just personality trait that I would say is important to use all this stuff is open-mindedness, just this sense of this will probably start working, or like being able to see the glimpses of what's possible is, I think, kind of the what's important. Because what I see in most of our users, and we now have over 30,000 product teams using Craftful, but it still is a tiny percentage of each company, when you think about it. And they will often tell me about interactions that they have with their colleagues where someone has tried ChatGPT when it just came out and they tried it on some use case and it didn't work. And so they're like, oh no, this is never going to work. And now they're not trying anything and they've been trying to send them like a team invite and they're not picking it up because they've decided that AI just doesn't do this stuff well. I think that's kind of what's important is just curiosity and playing around and with tools and trying to see what's possible today based on everything that launched yesterday, what's possible today. Right. I think that's kind of where I see the biggest need right now.
So we already have a problem as humans with lots of bias, and adding AI to it, we know we can just supercharge and scale bias beyond belief. Is there a chance that we can do this better, or are we just cursed to be worse at this no matter what tools we add in?
Yeah, I think that there is a chance for us to do this better, but we have to be really, really thoughtful about what we're trying to do, and that may be tough in an environment that's moving really fast. And to give you an example of where I've seen bias show up in our own work is, or rather how we've seen AI do better when it comes to bias is we ran our analysis on lots and lots of different like categories of products. And at one point we ran it on dating apps. And one thing we discovered is that most dating apps have this like list of feature requests, and somewhere around like feature request number 7 or 8 or so is always a request for better like racial matching. And when we saw this, when I first saw this, I was sort of appalled by this. I was like, well, app store reviews, you can never like, there may be some bad stuff in there. I don't trust this. But then as I looked at what actually is the underlying issue is that it's a lot of complaint from racial minorities that they're not getting as good matches as racial majorities. And the issue that we were seeing is that I assume is that when you use analytics to improve a product, you're really looking at the majority. And that's what most apps have been using in the past. And so they really, as a result, made the experience really bad for minority users. And they're complaining, but they're always the minority, and so no one's really listening to it. But when you're then using AI to surface everything that got said, then suddenly you're starting to see this minority voice and it gets surfaced. The question is, how do we make sure that this happens, right? Like, how do we make sure that that AI is better at it when we humans are not and the AI is trained on us? So how do we even get around this problem? And I think that really comes from, you know, there's essentially kind of two steps of training. There's this where the model learns how to talk and it just uses all of like the data on the internet to just understand what are words. Like it doesn't actually understand what are words, it understands what are tokens, statistical likelihood of them showing up again next to each other. But then there's this fine-tuning step. And in that fine-tuning step is kind of where we can teach it values. And that's really where we can counteract some of the biases that exist wildly on the internet and that we humans have had. And I think, you know, there's a lot of debate around how to do that right, how to not overstep, how to get the balance right. And I think that that's a very legitimate conversation to be had. But I think that there's just so much potential to try to get it right. And when we do, I think it will be better than humans, hopefully.
When you talked about fine tuning for this, I was almost thinking of it as like, you know, adding the personality to the model. But I like your thing of like, you know, giving it values. Is that only done at the foundational layer? Or if you're then working, you know, at that other layer, I guess, as Quaffle do, are you able to influence those values at that point as well?
Absolutely, right? At any point, you can have fine-tuning at different layers. In our case, we're fine-tuning our models to be a product manager, to think as a product manager, right? So we're sort of like, okay, there's the piece around how do you understand language that's already been done for us, then the morality that's been, or some of these values that have been added on top of that, where it will refuse to look at certain words or surface certain words that that it sees, which is great. And then on top of that, we add this like additional kind of personality that looks at data. And one way in which it shows up is that it will actually not hallucinate, like it rarely will hallucinate. So when you're trying to get it to hallucinate, so in our chat, you can ask something like, you know, what did users say about pink elephants? And it will say, your data doesn't have anything about pink elephants, in a kind of very matter of fact way. It also says no a lot. No, it doesn't do that. But but you definitely get that. You know, when you're focused on a specific use case, you get to add personality that is better at that particular use case.
Does it have to say it depends at least once a day?
Most certainly.
I'm curious, we've talked a lot about theory. We've mixed in a couple of examples, but can you give us a couple more examples? What are you seeing people accomplish today using AI as an accelerator for what they're doing?
Yeah, I think there's, I see two trends in my kind of Gen AI network. One is folks leveraging AI to create really innovative solutions to existing problems that have been unsolvable before. I think of ourselves in that category. We're able to take lots and lots of data and actually analyze it in a way that keeps the substance or the meaning, but makes it still really concise. And then the other type of kind of trend that I see is folks using really small teams to move fast and solve many, many more problems than you could previously solve because of kind of how our startup ecosystem has looked in the past. And so you have a situation where a team can identify a problem, they can start building a solution based on AI, use AI internally as much as possible. So they don't need a whole lot of resources, which means that they don't have to go out and convince investors that this is a problem worth solving, which is, you know, investors in many ways have been gatekeepers to, and they've looked at problems and been like, oh, is this a venture scale problem? And in the past, you know, a lot of things that are venture scale, like solution for women or minorities, haven't been considered to be venture scale just because those individuals weren't necessarily represented as widely in those professions. And now I think a lot of that is changing. And so you don't really need a whole lot of resources to get started. You can build something. You can, instead of going out and trying to raise money, you can focus on building. You can generate value. You can get revenue quickly and probably ultimately build venture scale businesses, even though they're not technically venture-backed, or maybe not to the same extent.
This has been such an interesting conversation, Jana. Thank you so much. We have time for just one more. And I'm just curious to know how you think product leaders should support their teams in learning how to take advantage of AI in their work.
Yeah, I think, you know, teams really should be exploring AI as much as possible. And so I encourage our team to do that at Craftful. I encourage people to do that, even if they're not at Craftful. As part of our hiring process, we have a task that we send out. And in that task, I specifically tell people to use whatever AI they want. And I'm not going to judge. As long as they can make sure that the outputs that they are delivering ultimately to me is something they want to stand by. And I think that's essentially kind of the support that everyone needs right now, is to tell people, go experiment, use whatever you use, see if you can make it work as long as you can put your name next to the whatever you say is the end product. But absolutely do not deliver anything that you wouldn't put your name next to just because it was AI generated, right? So I think that that's the way to mentor this new generation of AI-enabled folks.
Jana, that was fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a lot of fun.
Thanks, Jana. The Product Experience is the first
and the best
podcast from Mind the Product. Our hosts are me, Lily Smith,
and me, Randy Silver.
Luron Pratt is our producer and Luke Smith is our editor.
Our theme music is from Hamburg-based band POW, that's P-A-U. Thanks to Arnie Kittler, who curates both Product Tank and MTP Engage in Hamburg, and who also plays bass in the band, for letting us use their music. You can connect with your local product community via Product Tank, regular free meetups in over 200 cities worldwide.
If there's not one near you, maybe you should think about starting one. To find out more, go to mindtheproduct.com/producttank.